Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, September 16th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people and using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that webpage, click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner. It'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. It's a tool I've been using to great success for 17-plus years to remove negative emotions and improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that we've all been given. You can also download the actual tool itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files, which have been curated out of the past 10 and a half years of this radio show archives, and some of them contain powerful testimonials about the use of the work. Some of them are actual living examples of people being stepped through the worksheet process, and some of them are discussions about how the dynamics actually fit together for such a relatively simple process to be so powerful and effective. So we hope people go there, download the chapter 24 and read it, go to your app store, download the app and start using it, watch some of the videos if that's of use to you, and then call us with your comments or questions. The area code 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, it'll put a little question mark by your phone number, and I'll announce it by your area code, and we can have a conversation. We also have been committed to do the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year. Today is the 259th day of the year, and today's lesson reads, Let me remember that there is no sin. The commentary reads, Sin is the only thought that makes the goal of God seem unattainable. Sin is the only thing that could blind us to the obvious and make the strange and the distorted seem more clear. What else but sin engenders our attacks? What else but sin could be the source of guilt, demanding punishment and demanding suffering? And what else but sin could be the source of fear, obscuring the Creator's creation and giving love the attributes of fear and attack? Father, I would not be insane today. Father, today I would choose sanity. I would choose to perceive accurately. Today I would choose love I will not seek refuge in the opposite of love, for love can have no opposite. Father, you are the source of everything there is, and everything that is remains with you and you with it. Pam Grout's Course in Miracles Experiment Lesson 259 is titled, Who's Still Sitting on Your Lap? She quotes the brilliant author C.S. Lewis as saying, getting over a painful experience is much like crossing the monkey bars. You have to let go at some point in order to move forward. Pam writes, Marvel Comics' Kitty Pryde walks through walls. I walk through x-ray machines every time I board a plane. The TSA, I'm told, is looking for such contraband as scissors, cigar lighters, pool cues, and of course, guns and bombs. By scanning our carry-on bags, airport security intends to avert all potential threats to our safety and well-being. Pam writes, I would like to invent a compulsory x-ray machine that detects all of the grudges, resentments, and other negative stories we humans carry, not only onto airplanes, but into every area of our life. For most of us, there's a whole crowd of people still sitting on our laps, riding shotgun on our backs, and clinging to our legs like dead weight. That old boyfriend who cheated on you in high school. That boss who failed to notice all your hard work. Although neither of these has made a physical appearance in more than 20 years, there is still an oppressing presence in your energetic frequency. Quite frankly, those invisible energetic connections are more dangerous than any shoe bomb. You can cut off all ties, refuse to never see that dirty, rotten person again, but as long as you hold fast to any belief, any story that this villain, so to speak, performed some sinister deed, then they still own you. They thwart your superpower. They intercept all the blessings and miracles that the universe wants to bestow upon you. Lesson 259 asks me to remember, none of this is true. Instead of being insane today, I remember that love is my superpower. Love that rearranges molecules, love that alters reality, love for all people, love for all rocks, minerals, and vegetables, love for every blessed thing. Today, I surrender every story, every belief, every, quote, bad guy, unquote, that hinders my superpower. In doing so, I recognize that those boogeymen never really existed at all. All that exists is the creation, flowing through us, and we are part of it, and it is part of us. So that's Pam Grout's Course in Miracles experiment commentary and the Course in Miracles lesson for today. And as usual, we have about 50 minutes to entertain your comments and your questions. 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1, and we can have a conversation. How can we support you today? What would be the best way to make this time of service to you today? That's our purpose for being here, to be of service. Today is a Thursday, which means we have a Course in Miracles, not a Course in Miracles, we have a Mind Shifter support group tonight from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central. All the information needed to join us there absolutely free is available at mindshiftersacademy.org. Please remember there's a separate login page for each Tuesday and Thursday group. We've had some people unsuccessfully try to log into the Thursday group using the Tuesday login code. And we will be entertaining comments and questions about what people would like to listen to. We have done some work lately with both JM's online Aramaic Lord's Prayer immersion and the Dale Allen Hoffman work where he's doing Aramaic Wisdom of Light or Light and Wisdom. So on top of that, we routinely have people who do worksheets. And so that's a wonderful way to see the process in action and or gain insight about how you might better use or more efficiently use the worksheet process in your own life. And we'd be happy to have you join us tonight or any Thursday or Tuesday. And we'd be happy to have you pass that information along to anybody you think might be interested. You can call with your comments or questions, or you can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org, whyagain.org. I usually end the podcasts and my blog posts with the following statement. We come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Somebody sent me the Richard Rohr meditation for today, and he quotes from the book of the Lover and the Beloved, and that quote reads, "We are born out of love, we live in love, we are destined for love." So it's not new, it's not a new concept, it's not owned by anybody. The essence of creation, this creative force, the power, the beauty, the creativity of it, the extension of it, the reflection of it in itself is part of what people have been observing for thousands of years. And we're looking for ways to do two things. One is increase our awareness of that truth. And then the second thing is to learn and then gain effective skills in applying tools that help us remove anything that's less than that truth, anything that is based in a false negative conclusion, and anything that blocks us from having conscious, active awareness of our true nature. So I'm grateful to have my life at this point be arranged in such a way that I can donate my time to this work. And, you know, the current schedule of donating time to this work includes but is not limited to 5 hours each week on the internet show that you're listening to now, and then 3 hours on Tuesday night and 3 hours on Thursday night. And it often extends beyond that in other projects. And that time that I'm donating, that effort and energy pays me in other ways, and certainly not financially. Actually, it literally costs me money to maintain the website and the support groups and some of the other activities that I do. But the rewards that are available that I see in my life that are not related to the dollars and cents, they go beyond measure. And, you know, one of the quotes Dr. Michael Rice likes to repeat often is that we teach best that which we most need to learn. So if I'm still struggling with something and I'm willing to learn and get better, there's very few ways to get better at something that are more efficient than teaching it to someone else. My father used to say the old adage, see one, do one, teach one, and then that skill will be yours. So you see somebody do something, which is a skill that you don't have, and then you try to do it yourself, and then you teach somebody else how to do it, and now you'll have the skill locked into you. Well, what I've learned as a kind of an extension of that is that my learning is ceaseless. It's continual. It is flowering. It is growing. The more I continue to teach, what do I teach? Well, I teach awareness of the benefits of observation and the significantly more beneficial results I get when I live in observation compared to when I live from belief or dogma. And one of the first places in my growth reading, spiritual growth, whatever you want to call it, that began back in the early 80s was to be introduced to the writings of Krishnamurti. And Krishnamurti observed the same thing that David Bohm observed, which is there's a flaw in our process of thought, which is the source of most of our mental, emotional, psychological pain. And now, you know, what is that flaw? Well, it's hard to put into words, but I think one easy way to begin to conceptualize it is that our process of thought uses language and words. So in whatever way our language and our words are limited, our thought is therefore limited. The next thing that strikes me as so very problematic in our thinking and our language is the categorization, the labeling, the separating out of this as being separate and different from that. When at a very real level, there is no separation. And our physicists, our scientists are telling us everything is energy and all energy is connected. And yet everything we do with our thought is about labeling and cataloging and separating things, judging and qualifying and weighing. And so we are using a tool which separates, and separation causes pain and fear and sadness and judgment. And we're using that tool, and then it creates pain, and then we say, oh, let's use that same tool to see if we can end the pain. And all we do is keep creating more pain, more separation, more confusion, more distortion. So how can I know when something I'm doing is clarifying distortion or leading me to better perception? I can know by the fruits. What are the fruits? How do I feel? If I'm feeling a negative emotion, I could choose to use that as the infallible signal that I'm in error, that my thoughts are off the mark, that my perception in that very moment is being distorted. And then, if I'm lucky enough to have been exposed to tools like Michael Rice's Reality Management Worksheet or the Mind Goal Management Sheet and or the Mind Shifter Targeted Journaling Sheet, I can use that tool to start to remove some of the distortions, some of the false beliefs, some of the traumatic energies, which are actively distorting my perception. And the closer I get to restoring my perception to true spiritual faculty of perception, being able to see actually the full range of life as it unfolds, then I'm better informed, and whatever decisions I make, whatever choices I make from that point on, are bound to be more beneficial to myself and everyone around me. So that's why we try and teach these tools. We try and teach people a tool of the Reality Management Worksheet. I had a new person in my office the other day who's never been introduced to this, and I suggested that he go to the mindshiftersacademy.org website. And he found it very useful to go there and click on the link that has the best of audio files. and he began working his way through those audio files. There's Susan Bingham processing on the radio. It's about a 30-minute processing. I believe that's one of her worksheet processes. There's the summary of the work that poured out of me on December 30th of 2015, which was the best overall summary of that, of this work and the weaving in of the tools of Dale Ellen Hoffman and Guy Finley, et cetera, and Way of Mastery. There's a brief 7-minute testimonial from Susan Bingham. There's another worksheet Susan Bingham did. It's about a 30-minute file. There's a worksheet that Jill from North Carolina did on terror. And there's the interview with Pierre Pratervand. And in the near future, I will update that, and I will move some of those out and or add a file or two from the audio library or from other interviews I've done recently. But the audio library page has, I lost count of how many, it's probably over 30 files listed there. And the top one is a 26-minute file of me reading the reality management worksheet. And that was requested by some people who just don't do that well with visual material. Yeah, you can go to the whyagain.org website and click the link and download the PDF. But for some people, that form looks like a tax form. There's so many words and such small print and the glossary at the bottom. And for some people, reading, visually reading something is not a good way to get the information in their brain. So it was requested that we have an audio version of the worksheet. So I sat down at the computer and read it in. And that's available at the top of the list. And I try to keep that at the top of the list. If people want access to an audio set of instructions about the worksheet, it's literally me just reading the worksheet. But again, through that list of files on the audio library page of mindshiftersacademy.org, there are a number of other examples of people working through worksheets on the radio show. There are examples of me sharing some of my processing from different worksheets. And there are a few interviews that we've done here on Mindshifters Radio. So it's an invitation. The invitation is take advantage of this. These are resources that have been constructed simply so people like you can have an easier time understanding what it is we're talking about, why we would do this radio show, and what the specific tools are that we offer. So the call-in number again is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. I was fortunate enough to make the connection with Dr. Richard Moss yesterday. And he's agreed to be interviewed. That will happen probably this Wednesday, the 6th of October. He is the author of at least 2 books that are of interest to us and our Mindshifters Radio topic range, and that is Inside Out Healing and The Mandala of Being, Discovering the Power of Awareness. So Inside Out Healing, the subtitle is Transforming Your Life Through the Power of Presence. So again, it's a Thursday. We're having a support group. I'm also taking the time, since nobody has a hand up, to remind people we would welcome your suggestions. What is one of your favorite books or authors or podcasts? I have mentioned before unapologetically Black Unicorns, UBU, as a wonderful podcast. And This is a person with lived experience with mental health problems, very bright woman, and a very bright star in the field of advocating for people in mental health. And she just, I think maybe in June of this year, began that podcast. And when her schedule frees up, she's agreed to be interviewed for the On Your Mind podcast hosted by Journey's Dream. I should also mention that October 8th, 9th, and 10th of this year, just about a month away, the Integrative Mental Health Summit is going to take place. It's a virtual event. You can get access to it through your computer wherever you are. There will be 3 days of presentations related to integrative, alternative mental health, holistic, functional mental health approaches. So this is something other than just, here, take this pill and stay in this hospital or go into therapy for the rest of your life. These are people who are looking at a variety of ways that have been proven and a number of ways that are experimental to try and improve people's ability to go through a mental health episode and have it be transformational, have it be a positive life experience. Some of the people who are going to be on that speaker list and the panel discussions can be found at sameheareglobal.org, or you can go to the website at integrativementalhealthsummit.org and register for $25 or pay a little bit more and get access to the recordings for a year or more. I forget whether it's a year or forever. And you'll be supporting this not-for-profit Journey's Dream that is committed to rewriting the narrative on mental health to one in which optimal health and well-being is possible and expected, and where mental health experiences, adventures, challenges become transformational rather than tragic. So I'm looking forward to interviewing Dr. Richard Moss. I'm looking forward to your suggestions for other book titles and people to interview. And we have about 30 minutes to take your comments or your questions or outline a worksheet or explain one of the worksheets. You know, one of the worksheets we haven't talked about in a while is the Mind Goal Management Sheet. And the Mind Goal Management Sheet is the tool that Michael Rice presents in his two-hour lecture titled Getting the Stress You Need. And many people think of stress as a bad thing, and it's surprising when they hear a title like that that says you need stress. But the point is, and Michael makes this quite clearly in the lecture, human beings, we don't do anything without stress. We don't do anything unless we're motivated to change something. And the definition that we have for stress is the tension that arises within me by the difference that's generated between two images. The one image is the way the world looks to me now, and the other image is the way I want the world to be. And if there's no difference between those two images, I'm not motivated to do anything. I'm not motivated to shift my position in my chair. I'm not motivated to eat or drink or walk. Or I have to have some vision that I want things to be different than they are in order to have a motivation to do any behavior. So he talks about how the energies that we create, we call it stress or we call it tension, in our mind-body energy system, when we look at the world and we see it this way, but we say, hey, that's wrong, it should be this way or that way or the other way, that's what we call stress in this work. And what I say to people is that level of that stress is moderated by two factors. One of them is the difference between the size of the difference between those two images. If there's a big difference between those two images, it can create more stress than if there's very little difference between those images. And the second factor is, how much of my mind energy do I spend focused on the image of the way I want it to be, to the exclusion of focusing on the way it actually is? I can't change something that I won't even see clearly. I can't change something unless I first accept it, study it, and understand it. So even if there's a big difference between the way I see the world now and the way I want it to be, I can choose to focus more energy on the way it is rather than focusing a lot of energy on the way I want it to be. And then I can begin to work with the way it is and either gently or not so gently motivate it, mold it, move it to become more of what I would like it to be. But when I do that, I'm focusing on things I actually have control over and I generate less stress. But when I sit and I focus on things I do not have control over, I instantly and automatically create more stress. So in that lecture, Getting the Stress You Need, Dr. Rice talks about how every time the mind sets a goal, that goal continues to run in the mind until one of two things happens. One thing is maybe we can accomplish the goal. We achieve the goal, and then the stress is relieved. The only other way to relieve the stress of a goal once it's been set is to consciously cancel the goal. And in this culture, that's a really novel idea. I used to give business presentations and motivational speeches, and I was taught by people like Brian Tracy and Anthony Robbins and all these things. And all I ever learned in all of those talks was, related to goals, is set them and achieve them. Set them and achieve them. Set them and achieve them. Set your goals for the week. Set your goals for the month. Set your goals for the half year, the 5 year, the 10 year, the 20 year plan. Set your goals for life. Write them down. The magic of just writing your goals down, etc. I was taught all of that stuff. But I wasn't taught anything about what Dr. Michael Rice teaches in that lecture titled Getting the Stress You Need, that there are a variety of different activities that your mind can perform related to goals. Setting and achieving them are just two. Framing a goal before setting it is another one. Selecting a goal for active attention is another one. And canceling a goal is another one. Well, I'd never really heard of the need to cancel a goal, the benefits of canceling a goal, and he talks about it at length in that two-hour video. So I recommend that video to people for a variety of reasons. The primary one is that you begin to understand how you're creating stress. And once you understand that, then you've got various options for decreasing the stress and or creating less of it in the beginning. Another reason is that he has a specific tool that he presents in that workshop, which is called the Mind Goal Management Sheet. And it highlights the value of framing goals before you set them so that you make sure that you only choose to set goals that are in alignment with your values and priorities and the relationships in your life and the results that it is likely to produce. and that you get very clear before you set a goal what it's going to take, what resources are involved, and whether or not you're willing to commit to that expenditure of time, effort, and money. The other thing is, in that lecture, he talks about how there was ancient knowledge that said it's counterproductive to set a goal that I cannot achieve in the next waking period. So the appropriate use of my mind energy to manage my stress and improve my life has me only setting goals that I can accomplish in the next waking period. Now, when most people hear that and they've been, you know, trained on setting and achieving and setting and achieving and setting and achieving and have your year goals, your month goals, your 6 month, your 5 year goals, etc., that's just bizarre. Because I can't achieve my 5 year goals today. But I certainly want my goals. I want to plan for the future. And so there's an allowance in this work for having plans and intentions that go off into the future. But there is the delineation of the powerful difference between a plan, an intention, and a goal. And what it means is, for a goal, that means there's an intention that I have elevated to the commitment of doing a behavior to make it happen. And if I spend my mind energy committed to making something happen that I can't do until a year, two, three, 5 years from now, that's a lot of mind energy that I have focused on something that I have no control over, and that absorbs my resources, it constrains my resources, and it limits how much mental, emotional energy I have available to live my life in the moment, in direct observation, in actual relationship with the world and the people around me. And the way I manage that is to decide to start canceling every goal I ever set that didn't get achieved. And I choose to cancel every goal that didn't get achieved every night before I go to sleep. And just that practice of canceling goals can be a huge liberating factor for people. Michael has reported that some businessmen and salespeople have come to his intensive center and heard that lecture and gone to sleep that night and awaken the next morning having had the best night's sleep they can ever remember. Because it is a powerful tool to learn to manage the stresses of my mind through the canceling of goals that I can't achieve in the next waking period. The good news is I can always set the goal again in the future. I can set it again tomorrow. I can wait until, you know, it's let's say my goal is to sign up for a class at the college, but the enrollment isn't open until December. I can put it in my plans and intentions and put it on my calendar so that on the day that enrollment opens up, I can get up that morning and put on my list of goals for the day to call the college and enroll for the class. But now it's not a goal because it's not a goal for today, and I've only framed it out that I'll do it on the first day of enrollment. But I'm not setting that as a goal for today, so it's not absorbing my mind energy. And then before I go to sleep tonight, I, again, quickly with a breath or two, maybe a quick round of EFT tapping, I release and I cancel any attachment I might have to any goal that I didn't get achieved. I say very quietly, or very quickly, very simply, today is done, it's perfect the way it was, and I ask to be shown how to have a restful night's sleep. If by any chance I chose to use that tool and frame out some potential goals for the next day, I may ask for help in evaluating the goals I have framed out. So maybe I'll wake up in the morning with a fresh perspective on the goals that I might choose to set for the next day. As I do this, and everybody who's ever attended in the past 17 plus years of the MindShifter support group, everybody who's ever seen that lecture and taken the task on and used that worksheet and come back and reported to us, every one of them has said, that's a powerful tool. It's kind of amazing how I only set 3 or 4 goals in the day, but I get a lot more done because I framed them out the night before. I woke up in the morning, reevaluated which ones I would set, had a plan for how to achieve them within a certain time frame within the day. At the end of the day, I either accomplished them and recorded how it felt to accomplish them, or I canceled them, or I moved them back over into the plans and intentions category, and my life just kept getting better. I got more done. I felt more focused. I had more clarity. That's the standard response from people who have applied the Mind Goal Management Tool, which is available absolutely free, whyagain.org. Click on the Start Here link. Scroll down until you see the Mind Goal Management Worksheet. Click it, PDF file. Print it out, use it as often as you'd like. If you want a more full discussion of how to use that, you can purchase the 2-hour video lecture, Getting the Stress You Need, or you can call the internet show, or you can send an email. We've got another 15 minutes or so to talk about it. If you have any comments or questions about the Mind Goal Management Sheet, or the lecture, Getting the Stress You Need, or the value of canceling a goal, or anything else we've talked about in the last 10 and a half years on MindShifters Radio, give us a call. Let us know how we can support you. Let us know if there's another tool we've mentioned that doesn't ring a bell or that you don't know exactly the meaning of it or how to use it. Tools like the Codependence to Interdependence Worksheet or the Mind Goal Management Sheet or the 3 Early Memories of Conflict or the Mind Shifter Targeted Journaling Tool or the, there's a newer one, the Power Person Worksheet. And my mind is drawing a blank for the other worksheets. I'm not looking at the list of them, but aside from what's available, oh, the commitment. I literally pulled the commitment out twice this week and gave it to patients to use in their relationships, and it's a powerful tool that helps me get clear about how I want to act in a relationship and how I want to be treated in a relationship. And you know, it starts out with one of the most difficult parts of relationship, which is, the first line is, I promise to trust you enough to tell you the truth and be true to you. And there are those of us who absolutely know that sometimes can cost. That has a cost. Now, I also know that it pays big dividends. But it can cost. There are a lot of people that don't want to hear the truth. There are people in your sphere of influence. There are people in your relationship base, whether it's the intimate relationship, your business relationship, your casual friend relationship, and they don't really want to hear the truth. And that's one of the hardest ones right up front. I remember when Gay and Catherine Hendricks were going to be on the Oprah show, there were two critical points about that they tell in a story. And one of them was the producers of the Oprah show. It's a very heavily produced show. And they pulled them aside and they said, okay, here's your pre-show interview. Now let's talk about which one of you is going to be the talker. And it's a husband and wife a very mature, very well-respected husband and wife marital therapy team. And they said, well, we both are. And the producer said, well, no, one of you has to be the talker. And they said, well, we both are. And the producer said, well, we need to just identify you, one of you, because we only have one mic. And they basically laughed because this is the Oprah show. They've got, you know, incredible resources. And so they just got serious and they said, well, here's the bottom line. We are both talkers. And if we don't have, both have microphones, we don't go on. And so then the producer said, okay, here's the real story. Every time we've had a team of therapists on and we give them both microphones, they get into an argument. And Oprah doesn't want that. Well, they laughed and they said, well, we are going on. If you want us both, we both get microphones. The other part of the story, which is relevant to what I was just talking about, is that they said that when they went on the Oprah show, the thing that got the strongest reaction, positive or negative, it was a very negative reaction, but the thing they said which got the strongest reaction was they talked about the need for deep, complete honesty in a relationship. And they said the audience got so angry, some of them tried to charge the stage like a Jerry Springer show. It was, they were baffled. And they were just talking about what their experience is. They weren't telling people, you have to do this in your relationship. They were just saying, every time I keep a secret, I smother the potential for intimacy in my relationship. Every time I tell the truth, I throw open the door for increased intimacy in my relationship. And this is a wonderful signpost about our culture, that the audience at the Oprah show, which is an audience of fairly, you know, liberal, open-minded people, they got lividly angry at the suggestion of deep, completely open honesty in an intimate relationship. So Dr. Michael Rice puts out a commitment tool, which is like a personal code for a relationship. And it begins with the line, I promise to trust you enough to tell you the truth and be true to you. And I'm here to tell you, if you use that, many times it will lead to a better, deeper relationship. And sometimes people will leave your relationship. They don't want to hear the truth that you have to tell. They don't want to hear your perspective. They don't want to integrate your advice. They don't want to know about your fears, your hopes, your dreams. And that's got to be okay. You can't force somebody into a relationship, and you can't force somebody into intimacy. However, if you want intimacy, you have to be open. You have to have deeper and deeper levels of honesty. So that's the first line of the commitment. I promise to trust you enough to tell you the truth and be true to you. The next line scares away another whole passel full of people. I commit to always be sweetness in your life, to nurture you daily and treat you lovingly, gently, and with respect in my thoughts, words, and actions, whether I'm in your presence or not. Well, there are a lot of people that don't like the word sweetness. There are a lot of people that don't want to think about nurturing the relationship or their partner. And that's got to be okay too, because you can't force somebody to do the things that would create a more nourishing, intimate relationship. So tools abound on whyagain.org. Michael hasn't talked about it in a while that I've heard on his show, but there are, I think he used to have 15, now he's probably got 17 or 18 different videos that you can buy. He's got a whole boatload of them on YouTube, little snippets of them that you can watch. There's one in particular on YouTube that used to be there. I'm sure it's probably still there. It's the first hour of the four-hour Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop that he did in Woodstock, Illinois, when we had him here. I think it was 2015. And it turned out so well that he decided to put that first hour on YouTube for free. Now, if you want the whole four-hour video, you know, you need to purchase it, and they'll send you a DVD of it. However, it's amazing when you get a great presenter who's really on. Like, not every lecture Dr. Rice gives is really on. It's not always there's a good energy between him and the audience, and that he's not always perfectly tapped into intuition. But when he's on, it's amazing. And that was one of those that they thought, this came together so well, we want to give it to people. That's available on the YouTube channel. Why Is This Happening to Me Again? The whole first hour from a video that we did back in Woodstock, Illinois. So you can go there. Another tool we haven't mentioned in quite a while is the 24.5-minute video done by Michael Rice and Bill Cosentino of a PowerPoint presentation that delves into the inner workings of the Reality Management Worksheet. And again, this is another free resource. You can download it and or just watch it over and over again from your iPad or computer or phone. And every time you do, you get a deeper understanding of what's the mechanism that is so powerfully effective in the Reality Management Worksheet. And why would I cancel a goal? And what is the relationship between the goals I hold and the unconscious content? So we're excited to be able to offer so many good resources and tools, and we're delighted every time people take advantage of it. We've got more tools than most people ever discover, even if they come into this work and they like the support groups or they like the Mindshifter radio show, and maybe they'll do a reality management worksheet or two. But a very small percentage of people, in my opinion, actually dig in and get the whole toolkit of tools and start actively using them in their lives. However, when they do, the benefits abound. It starts to get amplified exponentially. It begins with my willingness to understand that I am creating my experience of life in each new present moment by what I choose to focus my conscious awareness upon. So by definition, I'm a very powerful creator. One of the things I'm creating in each new present moment is my experience of life. Once I accept that responsibility for the creation of my experience, and I'm willing to learn and start to practice some powerful tools, now I've opened up, you know, infinite possibilities for enjoying my life better, for being able to have, you know, more time spent in gratitude and appreciation and acceptance. And the more likely I am to have people say to me, "What are you doing? Something's different about you." And that's the very best way to teach these tools, to have somebody witness, have a different experience of you because you're using the tools on a regular basis, if not daily. So let us know how we can support you. Michael and Jeannie have another hour coming up. Today's Thursday, so we've got another hour today, two more hours tomorrow. Support group tonight that you can tap into or send to a friend who might want to tap into it. Let us know how we can support you. And give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1. Let us know how we can support you. Because there are only a couple minutes left, I'll remind you that we have the Integrative Mental Health Summit come up. It's coming up October 8th, 9th, and 10th. It's hosted by Journeys Dream and Mensa Medical, and it's going to have lots of various speakers talking about holistic and integrative and functional medicine approaches to your health, mental health, physical health, emotional health. And it is quite reasonable to attend, and I said, I've said a few times on the show already that if you'd like to attend that or get access to that virtual summit, webinar, et cetera, and you don't even have the minimum money they would ask you for it, you can email me at tjh@mindshiftersacademy.org, mindshifters-academy.org, and I will make sure you get access without any money if money's a problem. And we'd be happy to arrange for you to get access to that for free. If you can support them for that minimum donation of $25, that would benefit and help them, you know, spread these tools to even more people who don't have any access to funds at all. So I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of that stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim, and thanks for letting me know that the app was messing up again. I've got the technicians in India working on it. Hopefully it will be fixed by morning. So I appreciate you letting me know.
Yeah, it was interesting to me that I had a couple of people tell me that, and I tried it, and it wasn't working even before the latest Apple update that's supposed to be fixing that security gap. So...
All righty. Well, hopefully we'll have it working by tomorrow, and thanks for letting me know about it.
All right. You're very welcome. Have a wonderful show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Thursday, September the 16th, 2021, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1. And that puts you in the queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And while we're waiting on Michael to get dialed in, I'll just say, you know, even though I worked on the development of the app and I work on the website, I don't hit every page and I don't use it every single day. And so anytime you come across anything that's not working, whether it's in the app or whether it's on the website, please drop me a line and let me know. And my email is Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org. And just let me know what, you know, the URL, what the address is for the particular page. If you don't know where to find that, if you're on a certain page on the website, up at the very top of the page, you'll have what we call the address bar, which will usually start out HTTPS and then /whyagain.org/, and then whatever page you're on. If you can copy that and send that to me, it will let me know exactly what page is messing up or what's not working right. And, you know, help me keep our site up to date. It's a huge website and lots of pages. I don't even know what the page count is now. But I don't get on every single page. And so please let me know if you run across something that's not working, and I'll get it fixed as soon as I can. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Honored and delighted that you're here with us as we move into the next level of this conversation and the refinement of the understanding of first century Aramaic forgiveness. We're delighted that you're here. We're delighted that we're here, that we get the opportunity to do this one more time. You know, it's interesting. There are times when the main workshop that I do, Why Is This Happening to Me Again, I've done as often as 3 times in a day, and I can't count how many times over the last 50 years I've done that workshop. And it always amazes me, because each time I teach it, or pardon me, maybe I should say that the other way around, every time it teaches me, every time I open my mouth about the topic, another piece, another level of understanding steps into place. And oftentimes people will say, well, you know, why isn't it finished yet? Well, when your or my understanding of the universe is complete, maybe it will be finished. And, you know, the more I understand, the more that I understand I don't understand. I understand the magnificence of the energetic principles of this universe and by which we operate. And so it is an absolutely amazing, intriguing, and delightful process. And I'm honored to get to share it with each of you. We are starting a new chapter in the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? So we're now on page 113, if you're following us in the book. And if you don't have a copy of the book, unfortunately, it is out of print. However, we spread enough copies of it around a quarter of a century ago that there are still lots of used copies for sale day to day on Amazon and on eBay. So you can still find copies there, and or you can go to our website, and that website is whyagain.org, and you can download a copy of the book free in any one of several different languages. So glad that you're with us. And so we're at the top of chapter 18, Clarifying Love. Richard and I went back to our discussion on love. I put forward the thought that keys to the healing process is clarifying the idea of love, which has been ill-defined, misused, and distorted. Cleaning up its definition in our minds is an important piece of foundational work. 2,000 years ago, we were taught love was the most important law to human existence. It must come first if intelligence is to be maintained. Teaching love is not religious. It is the most practical thing in the world. One of the major pitfalls we humans have fallen into is that of making any teaching on love sound like religion. Many people throw out teachings based on love or only give them lip service because they think those teachings are religion, which they've been subtly taught to reject. Richard thought that the ideas on love sounded good, but wanted to know how to love someone who had just been abusive to him. He said in an exasperated tone, who could feel anything but anger and hate in that situation? To love, you must first straighten out your definition of the word. This may sound trite, Richard, but people who can feel love when attacked know what love is and do not have realities called anger or hate in them. And so a really important refinement that oftentimes takes people years to comprehend is to recognize that love is not a verb. Love is not something we do. It's not something we can do. It's not something we can get from someone else. It's not something we can give to someone else. Because it's a state of being. And people go, well, so what? What's the difference of a state of being or a verb? What's it matter? Oh, my goodness. If you haven't opened your study of how words impact perception and control the way the mind constructs the world that you see, then there's a whole study that needs to open And there needs to be comprehension of how words impact our feelings, our creative process, our physiology, our perceptual constructs, our behaviors, our attitudes, everything. And that one key word, you know, you go back and you hear preachers day in and day out talking about how this man Yeshua 2,000 years ago told you to love your neighbor. He never, ever, ever said to love your neighbor. It just isn't there. If you say, well, but he said, love your neighbor as yourself. He says, love God that way too. It's like, never, ever spoken. The phrase that people pick up as, and the Greeks translate as love God, love your neighbor as yourself. Actually, the word that was used instead of love is the word rachma in Aramaic. And rachma is a word that has no equivalent in English. It takes a whole paragraph to explain the word. Rachma is, in fact, a filter or a gateway in the frontal lobes of the brain. In Aramaic, you know, modern Aramaic-speaking peoples tell us that the definition, the original definition of the word has been lost. They don't know what it means, but they've told us that it is the most, in their tradition, it is the most precious jewel that you could possess. What is that jewel? It's a filter in the frontal lobes of the brain that keep the brain on track with data that is linked to love, informing its intentions, which are the raw material of goals, and goals drive perception. So it's a really important link in the chain. It you know, comes down to this most important jewel, most precious jewel. It's the gateway that allows our created human life to enter into this human form. You've very likely been in a workshop where Jeannie has asked the question, how many have ever held a newborn child? And then we've asked you to tap into the essence of that newborn. And if you haven't engaged in that, I'll ask you to do that now. Just tap into the essence of the newborn that you once held. And then think of a word that describes that newborn essence. And I'll offer that, having asked that question of tens of thousands of people all over the globe, everybody's descriptor of the newborn is some variation on the theme of love. People talk about purity and sweetness. But every word is some variation on that theme that people would use to describe the presence of love. And then I ask you to go to the next level, and as you tap into the essence of that newborn, is the newborn loving you, or is the newborn love? And everyone who has in memory the experience of holding a newborn kind of gasps and goes, well, obviously they're not loving me. They are love. If you mistake this one word in its definition, then you've talked about attempting to love someone who maybe is resonating fear in you. If there's fear in you and someone comes along and resonates your fear, you're saying, well, they said I had to love this person, but fear is what's moving, then fear is what's going to run the show. And to attempt, use a verb, to attempt to love them in that case is ridiculous. But recognizing that if someone shows up resonating your fear, and the goal you give your mind, the goal you ask your mind to support you in fulfilling is to stay connected to your essence as love, while your fear moves, then you just found the key to healing your fear or your sadness or your grief or your rage or your hatred or your vengeance. But if you think that the objective is to love this person, then you just made the objective impossible. Because love is what you are. It's not what you do. You can't do it. You can only be it. And so that's going to be the object of this particular chapter as we carry on this particular conversation with our character Richard. And we're delighted, and you know, our objective here is to create an availability of the tools and the understanding for people to have the ability to be aware of and live out of truth. Live out of their essential nature for each of us to be able to do that. And each and every tool, you know, people say, well, how do I do that? If you were to go back to day one in our archives, go back 10 years ago, I don't know, over 3,000 hours of conversations, Dr. Tim, myself, Jeannie, and others, Michelle, and so many voices on the show. If you went back to day one and listened to every hour of the archives, then you would be hearing instructions on how to function as love at every minute, in and through every minute of those archives. That's how big a topic it is. When we live out of a mistaken identity, then conversations become ridiculous. Our minds become twisted and confusion reigns. We're looking to clear up the confusion and return to the essence of being, the essence of being a human being. And we're glad you're here to be part of the conversation. So, Ms. Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it's all quiet. One of the things that came to my mind, and we've experienced it, or, well, I'll say I, but I believe you were also expressing a difference in feeling. In our work lately, where we've been breathing and reconnecting and really putting love active in our minds and everything, that we have been able to have discussions that before might have accelerated to a little bit of a strong discussion or miscommunication, and we've been able to talk about it without the energy attached to it. It's just been like just facts instead of impressions or being blurred by our perception or whatever. Can you talk to that? I believe that setting the RACMA has been a big part in that transformation with us. And I think I hear you talking in the other room, but I can't hear you on the phone.
You mean you want me to unmute myself to talk to me?
Yeah.
Oh, brother. actually, that sounds like an invitation to talk about the filtering system in the mind, which we really haven't discussed in a while on the show. So I think that's a perfect idea. And that is that there are three filters over intentions in the frontal lobes of the brain. One of them is RACMA. The other two are hostility and fear. And when you comprehend the function of a filter, you know, let's imagine it's a hot, sunny day outside and the sun's kept streaming in and all of the energy waves in the sun are entering the room, and so the room's getting pretty hot. You put a filter on it to filter out all the heat rays and the room cools down. A different energy enters the room through the window because you put a filter on it. Well, RACMA, in one sense, is a filter. And what it does as that filter over the windows inhibits the heat waves, the energetic rays from the sun that would create heat, infrared and such, filters those out. So RACHMA filters out intentions that would be based in negativity or intentions that would be destructive. So he was giving people instruction on keeping a particular filter active in their minds. And again, RACHMA is also a gateway for love to enter the human form. The other two filters are fear and hostility. If fear is active, then negative intentions gain admission to awareness out of our intentions. So negative intentions become available. If hostility is active, destructive intentions become available. So destructive and negative are fruits of the mind. You remember they said to Yeshua, how do you tell where somebody's at? He said, you look at their fruit. If your intentions or are keyed to either being negative or destructive, then you know that RACHMA's not set, but hostility and fear, one or the other or both of them, either one of those are. Only one filter can really be active at a time. And the reason why that's important is because intentions, and you might remember in the ancient teachings, they said that the road to hell was paved with good intentions. People will talk about their good intentions all the time. But if they don't know how to keep RACHMA active, their good intentions that they speak about will be overridden by the negativity or the destructive intentions they hold in their minds. And the reason intentions are important and why they were spoken of as having the possibility of being so destructive is because intentions are the raw material of goals. So the quality of your intentions determines the quality of your goals, and the quality of your goals determines the quality of your perception. That's the frontal lobes of the brain. The back of the brain where perception is stored, again, there are three filters. There's one that's comparable to RACHMA. It's called KUBA. And then there's hostility and fear. When fear is active, anything that the mind observes, turns its attention toward, when hostility is active, will seem irritating to that individual. The data the mind will use to build perception in that situation will show them irritation. When fear is active and one turns their attention to a particular object of attention, the only data that will pass through and become active as perception will be that which is threatening about the object of attention. And so if you're engaged in a conversation and you don't know anything about RACHMA, KUBA, hostility, fear, then hostility or fear, because that's so prevalent in the world, will tend to become your natural state. And if you turn to your attention to this person that you say, I cherish them so much, but you turn to them with fear active in your mind, they're going to seem threatening to you. It's going to be hard to have a loving conversation while you're feeling threatened by someone. Or, if hostility is active, you're going to be irritated. You say, you really irritate me. It's like, no. The filters in your mind allow the irritation that is within you to be active, and therefore your perception of the person you're turning your attention to, of your object of attention, is going to be filled with threat. It's going to be filled with irritation. Or it's going to be based in love. When you understand RACHMA and KUBA and love is active in your mind, then you're going to be able to address situations that when hostility or fear are active would lead to explosions and conflict and fights and trauma and drama. When those filters of hostility and fear are stilled, then you can have a conversation that is based in active present love about those same issues. And the whole game changes. The whole process changes when that occurs. So the practice of maintaining Rachma and Kubha, in the ancient teachings you heard them say, perfect love casts out fear. Perfect love would be the activity of both Rachma and Kubha, the filter that allows love to pass over intentions, and the filter that allows only data keyed to love to be used for perception. Now, if that's not a conversation you've ever been able to have, and you don't know that that's possible, and you live in a world of hostility or fear, then it seems like, well, there are certain subjects that are taboo. You just don't ever talk about those because there's too much hostility or fear attached. And people often refer to it as walking on eggshells. When you get to the point where you can join in keeping love active in your mind, you can talk about the topics that would be otherwise walking on eggshells, and the eggshells are gone. Changes everything. So we invite each person to enter into that practice. Jeannie, is that reaching the place you wanted to reach with that idea? Any other thoughts in that regard?
Yes. No, that's perfect. So does that ring a bell for someone, or would you like to understand more about it? Do you have a question? You want clarification? Press 1. We have 37 minutes.
Hey, Jeannie, you just reminded me of a terrible joke. I won't tell it. Oh, why not? What the heck? Nah, forget it. If somebody doesn't push one, I'm going to tell this joke. So do we have anybody up there in this land with a...
You've got their curiosity up now. They're not going to push one because they want to hear whatever it is. But I think I'd listen to my highest guidance there.
Are you saying I shouldn't? Oh, honey, it's cute. It's a cute joke. So this... You know, the old church in the little town, and the person, special bell ringer dies. And, you know, they advertise for a new bell ringer. And different people come and apply for the job, and there's this huge old bell, you know, right out on the balcony. And a man shows up who has no arms to apply for the job. And the old priest looks at me and says, you know, there's a rope. You have to be able to pull the rope. You couldn't do this job. And the guy said, look, I've dreamed about being a bell ringer all my life, and I've been practicing, and I can ring this bell. And the old priest is like, well, I don't know what to do, but okay, well, let's see. Go ahead, try it. And the guy just runs at the bell and bang, smashes into it with his face. And the bell rings beautifully. And the old priest can hardly believe it. And he says, I mean, but doesn't that hurt? He said, no, I've been practicing since early childhood. I can do this job. And the old priest says, well, okay, go ahead. Do it once more. And if you can do it, well, you know, the guy goes and bang into the bell, but he loses his footing and splat, drops 2 stories down to the ground. And, of course, it's dead. The old priest goes down and people are gathering around the guy on the ground and turned to him and said, do you know who he was? And the priest says, I don't know his name, but his face rings a bell. You're not going to groan, honey? Oh, come on now. That's a cute story. Don't be like that.
That's terrible, and don't tell the rest of it either.
Oh, you say you want me to tell the rest of it? Okay. No, I'll let it go.
Somebody press one and ask a question, please.
Ah, dear, what fun. Life. The original incredible joining. So how can we support you? What's on your mind? This topic of love is one that, the word has been so misused and misaligned and destroyed that it certainly doesn't represent in our culture the truth of who we are anymore in our common cultural language. And so is there something we can help to clarify for you around this topic? Or calling
we have a hand
on
up.
One of those stations. Oh, great. Let's say hello.
All right. It's area code 904. You are on the air. I believe this is Dusty.
Yes. Aloha, everybody.
Aloha, young man. How are you?
Hear you again this morning. Can you hear me?
Delighted. Honored.
I've been having problems.
You're loud and clear.
Oh, good. Well, I've been listening most every day, and there's always a takeaway in a program. Yesterday, someone called and was talking about Sri Aurobindo, and I haven't heard that name even whispered for decades, so it was a real pleasure for me. So I went over to my library and I dug through it because I knew I had at least one or two really old books of theirs. And The Mother. There's a little book called The Mother. There's a Sri Aurobindo in The Mother. And The Mother wrote this wonderful thing. And she starts right off by saying that that in a good connection ourselves and the one. Anyways, this she says to have aspiration from below and grace from above, and that's how that whole spiritual thing works. If you want to get to a particular place of enlightenment or consciousness. She says it takes complete devotion and surrender, is what she wrote. But that whole thing about aspiration from below and grace from above, and I think about grace a lot. I'm here in my mind on grace, self-grace in a way, and I wonder what the old with the Aramaic text and everything that you have access to have to say about grace.
Well, my take is
there a word? And
I'm not sure in Aramaic what the word grace would be. Haven't looked at that. My take is that in our modern world, grace has been made some sort of a mysterious thing that just comes out of somewhere mystically, and we have no control over it or what have you. But the best definition that I've been able to come up with, Dusty, for grace is the gift that we've been given as human beings to change our mind anytime we want. We literally have this power of choice, and in our power of choice is grace, in that otherwise, we're bound, in the Eastern mystics tradition, they talked about karma. You're bound to your karma. You know, whatever energy goes in, you're going to have to live it out. And that's an absolute, and that's just going to run your life, and doesn't matter what you do. But my take is that grace is the ability to access any energetic pattern held as karma, as they would speak of it, the law of cause and effect, as you sow, you reap. And it doesn't have to be as you sow, you reap. The natural flow of things is if you put a frequency in, you're going to get that frequency out. It's going to play out. But you were given grace. You were given the ability to change every frequency in your structure anytime that you want. And forgiveness is one of the tools or vehicles for carrying that out. That would be my take. Does that fit with your study from the...
Pardon?
I say, does that fit with your study?
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing there that it does not fit into the overall construct, because to me, grace in a way is what the indigenous peoples of this planet used to call a great mystery, in a sense. And I like the word, and I don't complete, and I heard what you said, and I think there's a whole, it's one of these things where I think we only get a glimpse of what could be the tip of the iceberg, and there's a lot more. As Dalai Lama said, and anybody that's got an IQ above his uranium, there's a lot more we don't know than we do. And but that word keeps coming up a lot, and I hear what you're saying, and I had something in my mind I wanted to say about grace, but blanked out. Oh well, worse has happened. Maybe the grace will bring it back, who knows.
Cool.
Yeah, and also, just on a quick note, a gal the other day called in and was talking a bit. I think she was just ruminating on it and just giving it a consideration to adopt one of these Afghan kids, take them in.
Right.
And
that was Susan.
I, while having biologicals myself, I took in a boy, a troubled, angry, tough-as-nails kid, about 7, that his mother kept abandoning. And I told her I'd take care of him and get him through something, because he was in trouble. And one thing I found with him, and I guess, I mean, you guys have raised kids, and I'm probably preaching to the choir here. Everybody that's listening has probably got kids or something. But what I found with him and what he made me do, because he was such an angry kid and he needed an extra dose of a bunch of stuff, I'm going to say Mike transferred to someone like an Afghani kid or something, and it was just, I had to do everything with love, but when I asked him to do something or told him to do something or da-da-da-da-da-da or whatever it was, I had to be crystal clear on what I was saying, that it was the right thing to do, and then I had to be willing to back it up. And I know of single parents, their kid's doing something, you know, they'll say, oh, Johnny, don't do that. Oh, Johnny, don't do that. If you do that again, I'm going to. Oh, Johnny, if you do that again, I'm going to. And nothing ever happens. But with David, and I don't know the culture of Afghan as such, but I had to just try to. I always had to make sure he knew he was loved, but that whatever I said, he had to know that I was absolutely going to do that, whether it was good, bad, or indifferent. I had to follow
right
through. And that consistency, and so after about 3 years, he started calling me his heart dad, which made me feel real, because he was a kid that could, he was beating up all, he was wiry and tough, and he was beating up all the kids anywhere near his age, his size. I mean, he was in trouble. He was on his way to duty. And his mother would just drop him off at someone's house and leave him. And so anyways, that kind of clarity of what I had to do with him and the follow-through, and boy, did it make me a better man.
I bet.
Yeah, and I know you all raised kids. It's probably all the same. I'm probably preaching to the choir on this, but I'm wondering about a child that would come over from Afghan. I mean, they've got their own social standards. I mean, they've got their own, grew up with certain things that were okay and some things that were not okay, and our culture may or may not translate to that. And so I would tell anybody that would want to take one of these kids on to try to understand the matrix he operates out of or has been operating out of as well as they can. And, you know, you, like I said, you're always going to have to love them just like your kids. And but to be crystal clear and don't say one thing and not do it, or don't, you know what I mean? You have to be very honest and follow through. That's a fact.
Yeah, it sounds like you kind of adopted a young man who had lived in a world with no consistency, and after you were able to prove to him that you were something he could rely on, that's when he became your heart dad. What a gift! What a profound blessing to offer a young man who just has had nothing solid in his life. So pretty profound.
As far as
bringing a kid from another country, a child from another country, I mean, the cultural shock, and, you know, we talk about the traditions in different cultures and such, but also the fact that literally, the perceptual constructs from one culture to another are totally, completely, in certain areas, different. And, you know, it's kind of like east is west, east and west is west, and never the twain shall meet. Their brain cells and therefore perceptual constructs are so just enormously distant from each other that certainly takes a consistent, persistent effort and presence of love to bridge that gap, and certainly will be a powerful gift for someone to give themselves, to obligate themselves to that form of expression.
Yes, and while you were saying that, it sparked something in me, which is, you know, I'm just aware of, like it or not, most of the time. And that's that some people, regardless of where they were born on the planet, are inoculated into the culture to such a degree that they think that culture is the, like a lot of people think this culture is the culture. And, it's a culture. It's, as an American Indian indigenous person, a friend of mine, used to say, it's the dominant culture. And then there are the kind of people like you and Jeannie and Patrick and others that can relate to the culture very well, but nonetheless have their own guiding light star, their own star inside. And so it might make a difference to what kind of kids came into their lives. Some haven't kind of an inner sense of things, and some are just completely attached to their culture.
Definitely a life fraught with opportunities.
Yeah, anyway, so it's just some thoughts. But and also, if you don't mind, you guys, yeah, this is a little time. I wanted to thank you for the trial loan of this Avison, and I wondered if you would be interested in hearing some feedback on it.
Sure. What's your experience been with it?
Well, I try it twice. I do it twice a day, sometimes three, but twice, because I've got it for this short period, and I've had a lot of gizmos, and just for people listening as a background, I was an RF engineer with all these licenses and things. So I've been around a lot of gizmos. I've got my own little, you know, Helia little boxes and stuff and all that sort of thing. But I will say that this Avison, I am more impressed with it the more I use it. It's such a biological, it's biological period, but it is amazingly well designed. The engineering, I just marvel at the engineering, the way this thing works its own vacuum and blah, 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 and does all these things. And I think I mentioned to you once before, at about, I've noticed it about 4.5 minutes, it calls my attention. And at 10 minutes, it almost demands I do something with the energy, because there's a certain kind of, I'm just going to use the word, biological being that I can feel with this thing. And it actually works. You know, it actually does something of significant value. And I'm kind of amazed that it works as well as it does. And once I get the blood flowing through my body and whatever, if I'm even semi-conscious, I will do some conscious breathing with it to avail myself of the extra flow of circulating blood. But no, I think it's a marvelous machine. I'm on the list. Yeah.
Well, it it amazes me that you pick those two time frames, the 3 to 4 minute mark. You know, when we talked earlier, you'd mentioned, and then the 10 minute mark, that when blood, you know, blood flows through the hand, and when it leaves the hand and goes back to the body, it takes approximately 3 minutes, just over 3 minutes, to move back to the hand again, and that you had a sense of that timing is pretty amazing, and that the blood that's warmed in the palm of the hand by the Avison, which totally changes the nature and character of blood flow. You know, blood is a non-Newtonian liquid, and the most popular non-Newtonian liquid we have a saying about is molasses. We say something slower than molasses in February. Why do we say that? Because when you lower the temperature of molasses, it doesn't flow very well. Well, blood is the same when the temperature is lowered, and when you raise it, it flows better. It changes the viscosity. So you're starting the change, and then once that exchange has happened three times, so we're at, you know, the 9 minute plus period point, all of the blood in the body has been warmed by almost a full degree. So the whole body is getting a treatment of warmed blood, you know, right down to the extremities of the toes and right to the brain. And that 1 degree, and one of the things that the Avison is medically designed for, and the FDA says you can make this medical claim for it being a class 2 medical device, is that muscles, when you pour warmed blood over them, relax. And one of the basic traumas of the culture is people live in what's called a sympathetic dominant state, where the sympathetic nervous system is active. And that means they're in fear, fright, flight, or another level of sympathetic dominance is freeze. And in those states, the body says, well, I don't need to digest food. I don't need to do elimination. So I can cut off nerve flow to, you know, a lot of the structure, and I can put that nerve flow into things like muscle strength, into eyesight, you know, literally changes the position of the eyes in the body so that periphery vision is wider. So we're in that protection mode, that safety mode. And that shuts a lot of bodily functions down that aren't necessary to survival in this moment. It's really a survive posture. And once you pour warm blood over the muscles in the body and give them the signal that they can now let go and relax, people move out of that sympathetic dominant state into the parasympathetic dominant state, which is a state of flow. And that happens about the 10-minute point when all of the blood in the body has been warmed by that 1 degree. There's a state of flow, and now instead of survival, it's thriving. The structure is set now for a different level of nerve flow and the ability to thrive, for literally for energy to flow through the whole structure and thrive and heal rather than be in protect mode. And, you know, it amazes me. And obviously you've done a lot of work in meditation and breath work and such to be that aware of your structure. But I found it quite amazing when you first shared that with me that you were aware of those two time points and the changes that were occurring. That's pretty profound.
Yeah, and, you know, what you said about the sympathetic nerve system, I think that's the parasympathetic at that, especially about that 9 or 10 minute mark. I think a lot of things in me switch a little bit like that, because first of all, I can't go anywhere and do anything anyway. I got my hands in the seat unless I turn it off. But I don't know. There's just a general sense of well-being. And part of the empirical part of my experience with this machine is, yes, what you just said about the blood circulation. At 4.5 minutes and then again between 9 and 10, it's consistent. Just like a clock. And if it was all over the place, I'd be going, oh, I'm wondering about that. No, but it's consistent. So I think you're on to something here with this gizmo. And I just, like I said, I mean, I've done a lot of electronic work, and I've built things, and I've done stuff. And this thing, it's a marvel. The subtlety of the engineering, things that you know, people are used to pushing a button and taking things for granted. But on this thing, I don't take any of it for granted, and I pay attention, and oh my goodness.
The whole idea of the device is to enhance microcirculation, and, you know, when it comes to the circulatory system, you know, veins and arteries, which are the parts of the circulatory system most people are familiar with and medicine deals with, there's something that can be done with those by medicine. But by and large, when it comes to the capillaries, micro blood vessels that are less than the tenth of the thickness of a hair, there's really not much that they've ever known how to do with enhancing microcirculation. And it's only those microcirculatory vessels that deliver blood and oxygen and nutrition to the cell and remove acidic carbon dioxide and acidic wastes from the cell. And we've got about 60 billion of those capillaries throughout the body. And at the head of each of those 60 billion capillaries, there are a set of muscle fibers that are called the precapillary orifice. You know, you have an orifice in your throat. You can open or close your throat. Well, those blood vessels have at the head of each those muscle fibers that if one lives in the sympathetic dominant state, those muscle fibers are locked up, tightened up, and closed up all the time. And so blood doesn't very effectively get in, which means oxygen nutrition don't get delivered. You know, people say, well, how could warming the palm of my hand change what's happening in my toes? Well, if you don't have proper blood flow to your toes, you know, in the case, say, for instance, of someone with diabetes, there's a circulatory disorder that impacts the microcirculation to the feet, and that's why people with diabetes oftentimes end up losing their toes and losing their feet to surgery because the blood flow isn't there. And it's because those precapillary orifices, the muscle fibers, are locked up. You start pouring warm blood over them, and they soften and they open. Now the capillaries open to allow nutrition and oxygen to enter. And when you get 60 billion capillaries that all of a sudden start opening and the whole body relaxes, that's part of the movement into that parasympathetic nervous state. Now there's a possibility that the red blood cell can get into those capillaries and deliver oxygen nutrition. That's the real power of the machine, is that heat warming the blood softens those muscle fibers. And then there's another little piece of the puzzle that it's kind of a fancy name, but it's called erythrocyte deformability. And erythrocyte just means red blood cell, and deformability means I can bend. Red blood cells are larger than the capillary head's opening, and they have to be able to flex to get into that capillary once the muscle fibers have softened. And when people eat junk oils, eat the SAD diet, live in fear, the red blood cell itself becomes inflexible. When you warm it just 1 degree, again, this is the non-Newtonian liquid, when you warm it just 1 degree, all of a sudden the red blood cell can flex again. So now the capillary head is open, the red blood cell can flex, and it can get into the capillary opening, deliver its load of oxygen nutrition to a cell that maybe hasn't seen a proper flow of oxygen nutrition for decades. That's why people's bodies tend to deteriorate over time, because, and it's not time that's the enemy, it's the fact that the oxygen nutrition aren't being delivered, and there's nothing picking up the waste products of metabolism to move that waste. The carbon dioxide is an acidic gas, and the wastes of metabolism in the cell are acidic. If the blood flow isn't going in, then those wastes aren't being pulled out. And that's where cells tend to become congested, locked up, and in pain, because it deprives the cell of oxygen. If you've got a 5% deprivation of oxygen to a cell, the cell's in excruciating pain. And so now delivering the oxygen nutrition, pulling the waste out of the way, cellular function changes dramatically. People say, well, how could the silly thing in the palm of my hand, warming the palm of my hand, change all that? Well, that's just the start of it. And then the next level is, once the blood temperature has elevated that 1 degree, the body says, I need to dump this heat. I've got excess heat. I need to get rid of it. You can actually get similar effects by sitting in a bathtub of hot water. There's an interesting article. I forget what date it was, but it was done by a study. It's a report of a study done by Loughborough University in England. It's L-O-U-G-H, Borough University. And it was in Discover magazine. The article also appeared in Newsweek magazine, if anybody wants to Google it. And they talked about the benefits of a hot bath. So Google, Newsweek, hot bath, Loughborough University, and they talk about how that hot bath, or going out and running for an hour or what have you, increases blood flow and the benefits that accrue to that. Well, one of the things that happens if you sit in a hot bath, of course, you sweat. And a lot of the heat is dissipated through sweat. One of the other genius pieces of the Avicen is that it was designed so that it does not open the sweat response. So now when the body wants to dump heat, instead of it happening through evaporation through the skin, which is what happens when people sit in a hot bath or, a steam bath or an infrared sauna or go out and run for an hour, sweat dissipates the heat. Here's where the next level of genius with opening microcirculation happens. There's no sweat release with the Avicen. The hypothalamus says to the body, open periphery circulation so we can dump that heat. So now the next level of capillary circulation is opened in order to allow the core of the body to dump the excess heat. So now we've got blood flow into the organs, again, into the cell, enhanced on the next level. And, you look at all those things together and you've got a profound shift in the delivery of oxygen nutrition, the removal of wastes from the body, and that changes everything when it comes to health. It's just really profound.
Well, that makes sense, and that was a great technical breakdown on this Avicen of certain things within the body. And I did not know part of it. But it's interesting to me that what kept me healthy, brought me back from the brink of death from an accident about 15, 20 years ago, is I put on fins on my feet, and I go out in the ocean, and I go out to, you know, body surf as many waves as I can, but I don't care. Even if there's not waves, I go out there and I power through the water for about an hour. I really make myself work. I started thinking just as soon as you said that, I don't sweat when I do that, but nonetheless,
you
I'm
don't sweat.
Yeah.
You're generating internal heat and your body's dissipating it in the same way that the Avacyn. That's probably why you were so tuned to that time frame of when those changes were taking place, because you've been intuitively doing it for decades. That's awesome. I hadn't thought of that. I knew that you did a lot of ocean swimming, but that makes so much sense.
Right. And you know, and what you said, there is a kind of a funny little comparison there in what it does. Like I said, I'm in really awe of the ocean every day, but you know, in terms of gizmos, this is it. I mahalo for the trial, and I just wanted to say one more thing because I know I'm sucking up a lot of time here.
Interesting conversation. I'm appreciating it.
Oh, good, good. Because I could go on. I'm sure we could both go on for a long time about this machine and its various relative salient points of this thing. But I wanted to say that I really like it on your program when you and Jeannie are really doing a little team there, and she speaks more, even your little dialogues back and forth and all that, it adds a particular dynamic that as well-spoken and knowledgeable as you are, wouldn't be the same without her. And when Jeannie talks, my ears listen.
2,000%, I'm with you.
Yeah. So thank you, Jeannie. And it's interesting that my sister's name is Jeannie and her husband's Michael.
Oh, thank you.
Cool.
So, but you're my sister anyway. It was funny because when I left the farm back as a kid, I went out in the world, and because I had such a sweet little sister, and she was the only sane thing within 5 miles, I assumed, for whatever reason, that all women were my sisters, and they are. That's how I look at it.
Thank you. I accept.
Thank you very much.
Got a new big brother, Gene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've been a brother my whole life. I've got a neighbor next door. He's a gal. High up to her. Just for her sake. When I go down to the ocean, I always scan it before I get in, and then I get out to see if everybody looks like they're okay. And I've drug a few in, you know, from outside, because I have fins. I can get out there before the lifeguard, if there is a lifeguard. But at any rate, I digress there. But I love the program. I love what you guys are doing here, and I hope people really avail themselves of it.
All right, my friend. Well, you have a blessed one. We're down to the last half a minute, so I'm just going to say, everybody, appreciate you. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world in blessings. Thanks, Dustin.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's
www.whyagain.org.